Sue Monk Kidd's debut novel, The Secret Life of Bees, has become a modern literary phenomenon, spending over 100 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and selling more than 6 million copies in the United States alone. This powerful coming-of-age story, set against the backdrop of the civil rights movement, has captivated readers worldwide with its lyrical prose and emotional depth. Adapted into an award-winning film starring Dakota Fanning, Queen Latifah, and Jennifer Hudson, the novel continues to resonate with readers seeking stories of redemption, feminine wisdom, and the transformative power of love. Celebrities from Oprah Winfrey to Barack Obama have praised its moving portrayal of a young girl's search for belonging in a divided South. Beyond its commercial success, the novel has become a staple in classrooms across America, inviting discussions about race, motherhood, and the universal need for connection. In the stifling summer of 1964, 14-year-old Lily Owens lies in bed watching honeybees squeeze through the cracks of her bedroom wall. These mysterious visitors have been coming to her for years, humming along her skin with their high-pitched zzz that both frightens and fascinates her. Despite everything that will happen this summer, Lily will always remain tender toward these bees. Life on T. Ray Owens' peach farm outside Sylvan, South Carolina, is lonely and harsh. Lily calls her father T-Ray because Daddy never suited him, a man whose love died alongside his wife 10 years ago. Lily's only companion is Rosaline, the black woman T-Ray pulled from the peach orchard to cook, clean, and care for Lily after her mother's death. Though Rosaline has a gruff exterior, black as night with a tent-shaped body, she's the closest thing to a mother Lily has known. Lily's only memory of her real mother is the day she died, December 3, 1954. She was packing a suitcase when T-Ray arrived, and their argument escalated until her mother grabbed a gun from the closet. In the confusion that followed, the gun went off. "This is what I know about myself," Lily confesses. "She was all I wanted, and I took her away." The weight of this memory haunts Lily's days as she struggles with unpopularity at school, wearing homemade clothes and forbidden from normal teenage activities. Her only treasures are items she found in the attic, her mother's white cotton gloves, a photograph, and a small wooden picture of a black Mary with Tiburon SC written on the back. These precious artifacts remain buried in a tin box in Lily's secret orchard spot, her only connection to the mother she lost. When President Johnson signs the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Rosaline decides to register to vote. The next day, Lily's birthday, they walk to town together, but their journey takes a devastating turn when Rosaline confronts three racist men and defiantly pours her snuff jug across their shoes. The men attack her, and soon Rosaline is arrested, beaten, and jailed. When T-Ray reveals that the worst of these men, Franklin Posey, might kill Rosaline, Lily knows they must escape. After helping Rosaline flee the hospital where she's being held, Lily makes a split-second decision. They'll go to Tiburon, South Carolina, the town written on her mother's Black Mary picture. With nothing but a duffel bag containing clothes, her mother's treasures, and her meager savings, Lily leaves behind a note for T-Ray. "Don't bother looking for me. People who tell lies like you should rot in hell." After hitchhiking to Tiburon, Lily makes a momentous discovery in a general store: jars of honey with labels bearing the exact same Black Mary picture her mother had owned. The storekeeper tells her the honey comes from August Boatwright, a colored beekeeper who lives in a bright pink house on the edge of town. Convinced this can't be coincidence, Lily leads Rosaline to the house, certain it will provide answers about her mother. The house is indeed Pepto-Bismol pink, a shocking color against the South Carolina landscape. In the yard, Lily spots a woman in white tending beehives, the mistress of bees, the portal into my mother's life. They're greeted by June Boatwright, August's stern sister who plays a cello-like instrument, and May, another sister who seems simple-minded and emotionally fragile. Inside, Lily is transfixed by a wooden Black Mary statue that makes her feel both glory and shame at the same time. When August appears, Lily blurts out that they've run away and have nowhere to go. Despite June's objections, August offers them cots in the Honey House, a converted garage filled with honey-making equipment. August Boatwright emerges as a woman of remarkable wisdom and compassion. She pays farmers to place her hives on their land, rewarding them with honey even though they'd welcome her bees for free. She constantly monitors her colonies in her old flatbed truck on what she calls bee patrol. Under August's guidance, Lily learns the intricacies of beekeeping, how to ensure the queen has room to lay eggs, how to remove honey-filled frames, and how to use smoke to calm the bees. The Boatwright sisters live in a world unlike anything Lily has experienced. May's extreme sensitivity requires special care. She feels everyone's suffering as her own, a vulnerability that stems from losing her twin sister April to suicide years ago. August and June created a wailing wall inspired by Jerusalem's Western Wall as a place for May to write down and deposit her burdens. June, meanwhile, refuses to marry her longtime suitor Neil, having been jilted at the altar years before. Most fascinating to Lily is the sisters' spiritual practice. They belong to a group called the Daughters of Mary, who worship the black Madonna statue they call Our Lady of Chains. August tells the story of how during slavery times, a man named Obadiah found the wooden figure washed up on a riverbank. When he knelt before her, he heard her voice say, "I'm here, I'll be taking care of you now." The slaves brought her to their praise house, where she gave them courage and whispered plans of escape. When the master tried to chain her away, she miraculously broke free 50 times, earning her name. As July blazes on, Lily falls into the rhythm of life at the Pink House. She works alongside Zach Taylor, August's godson and assistant beekeeper, a handsome, ambitious black teenager who dreams of becoming a lawyer despite the racial barriers of 1964 South Carolina. Their friendship blossoms into something deeper, though both understand the impossibility of their attraction in the segregated South. People can start out one way, and by the time life gets through with them, they end up completely different, August tells Lily one day. This truth reverberates through the novel as Lily gradually reveals pieces of her story to August, though still hiding the crucial facts about her mother and their flight from Sylvan. The peaceful sanctuary of the Pink House is shattered when Zach is arrested after one of his friends throws a bottle at a white man. Though Zach wasn't involved, he's taken to jail with the others. May, overwhelmed by this injustice on top of her lifetime of sorrows, walks to the river one night and takes her own life, weighing herself down with a river stone. May's suicide devastates the household. During the four-day vigil before her burial, August finds May's final note. "It's my time to die, and it's your time to live. Don't mess it up." This prompts August to confront June about her fear of love, urging her to marry Neil before it's too late. At the funeral, the bee hum swells around them as May's coffin is lowered into the ground, the sound like souls flying away. After a period of mourning, life slowly returns to the Pink House. June finally accepts Neil's proposal, and preparations begin for Mary Day, the Feast of the Assumption, a celebration honoring Our Lady of Chains and giving thanks for the honey harvest. During the ceremony, Lily slips away with Zach to the river, where he kisses her and gives her his dog tag, promising that someday after college, they'll be together. Finally ready to confront the mysteries that have haunted her, Lily approaches August with two crucial pieces of evidence: the cherished photograph of her mother and the Black Mary picture that had led her to Tiburon. August's revelation unfolds like a tapestry of long-buried memories, each thread both healing and heartbreaking. Deborah Fontenelle, Lily's mother, had indeed found sanctuary with the Boatwright sisters, but the connection ran deeper than Lily could have imagined. August's revelation had been Deborah's nanny during her childhood years, forming a bond that would later become a lifeline during Deborah's darkest days. The story of her parents' marriage emerges in painful detail. Deborah, young and uncertain, had initially refused T. Ray's marriage proposal, seeing in him none of the dreams she'd harbored for her future. But fate intervened with an unexpected pregnancy, and she found herself accepting a proposal she'd once rejected, trying to do what society deemed right. The marriage proved to be a slow descent into unhappiness, with Deborah wilting like a flower denied sunlight under T-Ray's increasingly controlling and bitter nature. After years of enduring an oppressive marriage that had stripped away her spirit, Deborah suffered a complete nervous breakdown. In her desperation, she fled to the only place she knew would offer unconditional sanctuary, August's house in Tiburon. However, she made the heart-wrenching decision to leave 4-year-old Lily behind, believing she was too unstable to care for her daughter properly. During her 3-month stay with the Boat Rent sisters, August helped Deborah heal and rebuild her strength, but the separation from Lily created an unbearable ache that eventually drew her back to Sylvan. The truth hits Lily with stunning force. Her mother had indeed returned, not for mere possessions, as T-Ray had bitterly claimed, but for her daughter. She had arrived with plans for divorce papers and dreams of a new life with Lily and Tiburon. The memory of that fatal day suddenly crystallizes with devastating clarity. The open suitcase on the floor, her mother's frantic packing, the heavy sound of T-Ray's boots on the stairs. The ensuing confrontation spiraled into violence, with Deborah reaching for a gun in the closet. When T-Ray wrestled it from her grasp, Lily, in her childish desire to protect her mother, picked up the fallen weapon. The gun's discharge was accidental, a tragic moment that would define the rest of her life. Overwhelmed by these revelations that shatter her carefully constructed fantasies, Lily explodes in grief and rage. She tears through the honey house, her pain finding expression in destruction as she hurls jars of Black Madonna honey against the walls. The honey splashes and drips, creating a sticky tableau of her shattered illusions. Standing amid the wreckage, blood from broken glass trickling down her arm, Lily feels hollowed out. All her carefully nurtured stories about her mother, the ones that had sustained her through lonely nights, suddenly seem like empty fairy tales. In this moment of brutal truth, she sees herself as she truly is, the girl she left behind, a child abandoned twice, once by choice and once by tragic circumstance. August finds Lily early the next morning in the honey house and shares her deepest wisdom about spirituality and motherhood. Our Lady is not some magical being out there somewhere like a fairy godmother. She's something inside of you. With gentle persistence, she explains to Lily that every person must cultivate their own internal mother, a source of self-love and strength. She helps Lily understand that the Black Madonna, Mary, represents the voice of courage that emerged when she stood up to T-Ray's abuse, the inner strength that said, "No, I will not bow down." August emphasizes that this internal mother never abandons us, unlike human mothers who may leave through death or choice. "That's the only purpose grand enough for a human life," she declares with conviction. "Not just to love, but to persist in love, even when the heart feels empty and lost." The novel reaches its emotional climax when T-Ray arrives at the Pink House, having finally tracked Lily down through a combination of determination and local gossip. The sight of his daughter wearing Deborah's distinctive whale pin, a cherished memento from her mother, triggers something dark in him. His eyes glaze over with confusion and rage, the past and present blurring as he sees not his daughter, but his dead wife standing before him. "You're not leaving me again," he mumbles in a dangerous tone, grabbing Lily with violent desperation. Without hesitation, August and the Daughters of Mary form a protective human chain around Lily, their solidarity unshakable. Faced with their unified strength and determination, T-Ray's anger deflates into resignation, and he finally leaves with a bitter good riddance. In the raw aftermath, before he drives away forever, Lily finds the courage to ask the question that has haunted her entire life: did she truly kill her mother? T-Ray's answer comes with brutal honesty, but also a hint of compassion. "It was you who did it, Lily. You didn't mean it, but it was you." As his truck disappears down the long driveway in a cloud of red dust, Lily turns back to the porch where her new family waits: August, Rosaline, May, June, and all the Daughters of Mary. "All these mothers," she reflects, "like moons shining over me. understanding at last that motherhood transcends biological bonds, existing in the love and protection offered by this remarkable community of women who have chosen her as their own. Throughout the novel, the power of female community emerges as a central theme, manifesting in multiple layers of relationships and support systems. The Boatwright sisters and the Daughters of Mary create not just a sanctuary, but a vibrant ecosystem where women's stories are heard, validated, and transformed through collective understanding. As writer Isaac Dinesen noted, all sorrows can be born if we put them in a story or tell a story about them. This profound truth materializes in Lily's journey. She discovers a place where her narrative can unfold without judgment, allowing her to transform her deep-seated sorrow into understanding and eventual healing. The beehive serves as a sophisticated and multi-layered metaphor for this female community. August, drawing from her extensive beekeeping knowledge, explains that honeybees are social insects living in intricate colonies comprising a single queen and her many daughters, known as workers. These sister bees demonstrate remarkable cooperation in their daily activities, from food gathering and nest building to the careful rearing of offspring. The queen produces a vital substance that can be obtained only through direct physical contact, stimulating normal working behavior in the hive and maintaining the colony's harmony. This parallel perfectly illustrates how the women in the story nurture each other through direct, meaningful connections. Like the bees, the women in the pink house create their own colony, with August serving as their queen, providing not just wisdom and direction, but also emotional sustenance and spiritual guidance. The house becomes a living organism of female energy and mutual support, where each woman contributes to the collective well-being. May's emotional sensitivity, June's fierce independence, and August's nurturing wisdom create a balanced environment of healing and growth. When Lily arrives, queenless and demoralized from her traumatic past, she finds her place in this new hive, gradually healing from her wounds through the loving attention and guidance of these surrogate mother figures. The Daughters of Mary further expand this concept of female community, representing a broader sisterhood that transcends racial and social boundaries. Their rituals and gatherings provide a sacred space where women can share their struggles, celebrate their victories, and draw strength from their collective experiences. Through their ceremonies and traditions, they demonstrate how female solidarity can challenge societal norms and create powerful spaces for personal transformation. In the end, Lily learns that motherhood transcends biological connections, manifesting in multiple forms and through various relationships. Through August, Rosaline, June, and the Daughters of Mary, she discovers different aspects of maternal love: wisdom, protection, challenge, and celebration. August provides the steady wisdom of experience and gentle guidance, while Rosaline offers fierce protection and unwavering loyalty. June's initial resistance pushes Lily to prove herself worthy, and the Daughters of Mary demonstrate the power of communal feminine support and celebration. "You have to find a mother inside yourself," Agnes tells her in a pivotal moment. "We all do. Even if we already have a mother, we still have to find this part of ourselves inside." This profound truth becomes Lily's guiding light as she navigates her emotional journey. The inner mother represents self-compassion, resilience, and the ability to nurture one's own growth, qualities Lily gradually develops throughout her stay at the Pink House. Through working with the bees and living among these strong women, Lily learns to mother herself in practical ways, standing up for her beliefs, processing her grief, and making peace with her imperfect past. She begins to understand that mothering isn't just about care received from others, but about developing the capacity to care for oneself and others in return. As the novel closes, Lily creates a deeply meaningful shrine in the honey house with her mother's precious belongings: the tortoiseshell mirror that reflected her mother's face, the hairbrush that held strands of her hair, the poetry book filled with her thoughts, the whimsical whale pin, and their only photograph together. These objects become sacred artifacts, connecting her to both the mother she lost and the mother she's becoming. She understands now that you can't really leave your mother behind. She's imprinted in you. She's always there, not just as a memory, but as an essential part of her identity. The bees, nature's great matriarchal society, continue their ancient dance, humming through the walls of the honey house. Their presence serves as a constant reminder that life, like honey, contains multitudes. It can be both sweet and wild, both ordinary and miraculous. The bees demonstrate the power of feminine wisdom and collective strength, just as the women in Lily's life have shown her different facets of maternal love. In their collective wisdom, the bees and the women have taught her the most important lesson, that love persists even through our deepest wounds, and that forgiveness, like honey, can preserve what might otherwise be lost. This transformation allows Lily to create a new understanding of family, one based not on blood ties alone, but on chosen connections and shared experiences. The pink house becomes more than a refuge. It becomes a place where she can finally bloom into her full self, supported by the maternal energy that surrounds her in both human and natural forms. Sue Monk Kidd's novel reminds us that we all have secret lives, hidden sorrows, unexpected joys, and deep longings that often remain unexpressed. Like bees building their intricate honeycombs in darkness, we construct our inner worlds away from public view, creating spaces of both vulnerability and strength. These private chambers of our hearts hold memories, dreams, and fears that shape who we are, even as we present different faces to the world. The secret life of Lily Owens, her guilt over her mother's death, her yearning for maternal love, her awakening to racial injustice and romantic feelings, mirrors our own complex inner journeys. Through her story, we recognize our universal need for belonging, forgiveness, and self-acceptance. Her struggle with the weight of her past, particularly the crushing burden of believing she killed her own mother, reflects how we all carry private burdens that influence our daily actions and relationships. The way she guards these secrets, sharing them only in careful measures with those she trusts, demonstrates how we all carefully curate what we reveal to others. As August tells Lily while showing her the mysterious workings of the hive, most people don't have any idea about all the complicated life going on inside a hive. Bees have a secret life we don't know anything about. The same could be said of the human heart, a complex, mysterious organism capable of tremendous suffering and remarkable resilience. Just as bees perform their intricate dances and complex social rituals hidden from human eyes, people carry out their own internal choreographies of emotion, memory, and desire. The novel explores how these secret lives manifest in different ways. May's overwhelming empathy that leads to her depression, June's carefully guarded heart protecting old wounds, and Rosaline's quiet dignity in the face of racial prejudice. Each character demonstrates how our inner worlds shape our outer actions, often in ways others can't fully comprehend. The Boatwright sisters' house itself becomes a metaphor for these hidden lives, its pink walls containing countless stories, secrets, and sacred spaces where healing can occur. In the end, the secret life of bees is not just about bees or even about mothers and daughters. It's about the hidden currents that run through all our lives, the unspoken griefs, the unexpected connections, and the surprising reservoirs of strength we discover when we're brave enough to face our truths. Like the honey that sweetens the novel's pages, these discoveries can transform even our bitterest experiences into something that, eventually, nourishes and sustains us. The story suggests that while we may never fully understand the secret lives of others, acknowledging their existence and honoring their complexity is essential to human connection and understanding.